Welcome to Learning Works. I'm Tony Ryan. Well, it's a long way from the cold northern reaches of Canada to the heat and dust of outback South Australia. During the annual conference of the Australian Council for Adult Literacy in Perth last year, I spoke with someone who has worked with First Nation people in remote and very cold regions of Canada, and also with Aboriginal Australians in remote parts of South Australia.
My name is Michelle Eady, and I'm a Canadian from a place called the Sioux Lookout, Ontario, which is a very small northern community, but beautiful in northern Ontario. And I'm an international scholarship holder from the University of Wollongong, and I'm here working with Indigenous communities and online technology. Now, I have held the position of Distance Projects Coordinator for the Good Learning Anywhere project in Ontario, and now I'm here doing some studies.
You're no stranger to South Australia. You've been here before.
I have.
Tell me about the work you've been doing in South Australia.
Yeah. I've had the pleasure of being able to see your beautiful city and doing some traveling out into the far reaches of South Australia. And I've had wonderful experiences. I've seen the Flinders Ranges and I've seen the York Peninsula. And so I've been very lucky that way. I've been doing some work with an Indigenous community and taking a look at how we can use technology to support some of the learning needs in that community for adults in the community in South Australia.
So you're making use of technology. I assume the technology is available widely in the communities, but tell me about the kind of project that you've been involved in to bring technology into these communities for use in learning.
Sure. So in Ontario, in Canada, we have a government system that has provided funding for literacy programs specifically. So there's a Ministry for Education for children, kind of not to year 12. And then there's a ministry that takes care of TAFEs, or colleges as we call them, and universities and literacy-based programs. And those programs are broken down into four streams, Anglophone and Francophone, which are our two official languages, and Native or Aboriginal, and a Deaf stream. And those streams actually receive funding specifically to run literacy programs. There was a call out in 2003 that asked for agencies who would be interested in helping to reach adult learners at a distance with their literacy and employability skills. And we put in a proposal that we called Good Learning Anywhere, which was aimed at reaching the Indigenous adult learners who are directly north of Sioux Lookout, where I'm from. There's about 35 Indigenous communities there in the north. And those communities are accessible only by winter road or ice road trucker. I'm an original ice road trucker, or by plane in the summer, they have skis on the plane, so you land on the water. And so what we did was piggybacked on the internet that had been brought in by an organization called KNET, funded again by the government, into these communities. A lot of them have high-speed internet connectivity. And we use a program called Centra. And Centra is an online platform where you would log into that platform and meet people in live time. So people are just sitting at their computer, they have a headset and a microphone on, they log in, and you're suddenly on your screen, you see everybody else that's in the class, and you can see slides of PowerPoint and that kind of thing. And so we've tried to reach those people and help them with their literacy and employability skills while they're staying in their community. And that's where the program or the project started from.
So that's what you were involved in Canada. Mm-hmm. How has that translated to what you're doing in Australia and in South Australia?
Sure. So the program in Canada actually ended up to be a very successful program. There's over 700 learners that have been reached. And now the organization, Sioux Hudson Literacy Council, has been expanded to reach all Indigenous learners or make their services available to all Indigenous learners province-wide, so statewide, and has won an award for the project around the Council of Federation of Literacy Award, which is really great. That has afforded me to go to lots of different conferences and present about the success of our program and how we've been able to make it work. And at one of those conferences in San Francisco, I met Mrs. Wendy Golder from the Government of South Australia. And she works with a unit called the Outback Connect. And we had a conversation about the similarities in our projects and the kinds of things that were happening in the project in Canada and the projects that are happening in South Australia. And she suggested if I ever made it to South Australia that perhaps there would be a place for a project such as the one in Canada with her organization. And so it did happen that I ended up receiving an international scholarship, and it's a 3-year scholarship to come and do my PhD in education. And I wanted to take a look at maybe a bit of a different perspective. So the way that we've been doing it in Ontario is taking curriculum that's mandated by the government and bringing that into the community and asking community members to do that. And I wanted to take a look at the self-identified needs. What does the community feel is a real need? What is something that they want to see happen for their community? And build learning experiences around that need. So I was lucky enough to visit 3 different communities and chose one to work with. And that community had a real strong sense about their public school. And it's at threat of being closed. And they wanted to be able to have a voice to express the importance of their school and what their school has meant to them over the past 140 years. And so that's what the project ended up being. So that's kind of how it moved from Canada to South Australia. When I start my talks or if I'm at a conference, I usually start with the story about, you know, explaining that I'm not an Aboriginal person and I'm not of Aboriginal descent. However, when I was in grade 4, I needed to write a story about myself. And I thought that I had quite a boring background because my mother's Dutch and my father's Canadian, and you can't get much more boring than that as far as I was concerned. And so I said to my dad, you know, what am I going to write about myself? And he said, didn't you know that your great-great-great-great-great-grandfather was Old Chief Lone Cloud of the Mi'kmaq tribe, which is in eastern Canada, and you're actually an Indian princess? And I said, me? An Indian princess? And I went around school and I made my friends bow to me, and it got a little bit out of hand. It was the only time that I was ever sent to the principal's office was because I was making people bow to me. Anyway, about 25 years later, when I brought my husband to the public school, they have a great big wall called the Teacher's Wall of Fame, and they hang pictures and pieces of work from students in the past just to give you a little bit of humor in your day as a teacher. And isn't my story about me being an Indian princess in a frame hanging on that wall? So that's where it all began, and I don't know how, you know, how it flourished and kept going to this point, but that's how my story began in working with Indigenous people.
So I like it.
There you go.
My guest in Learning Works today is Michelle Eady from the University of Wollongong in New South Wales. What does this project and the availability of resources and communication technology mean to people in remote areas of South Australia?
That's a really good question, Tony. Well, first of all, you had mentioned earlier about the accessibility of technology, and I just wanted to clarify that maybe before we go too much further. A lot of the research is saying right now that computer technology is accessible in these communities, and that the problem is broadband width, and that there's not enough broadband in these communities. In actual fact, I would say that there are still issues around hardware and computer resources in that way in a lot of these communities. In the specific community that I was working in, I borrowed 4 laptops to bring into the community to use. Now, they did have a good high-speed broadband with a tower that had just been implemented, but no resources to continue that internet service. So I think that there's some of those real basic issues around computers and hardware and accessibility that still need to be thought about when we think about these communities. But I think what's really important, or what's been a really important to me, is that I have lived in remote and isolated communities in Canada for about 7 years, about 200 kilometers south of the Arctic Circle in a fly-in remote community. And people have really specific, special ways of living in their communities. And they have a culture to uphold, and they have traditions, and they have a way of life that's very sacred and important to them. being able to reach them with this kind of technology and help with skills that they find are important to them allows them to stay in their community, to work and live in their community, to continue the lifestyle that they're used to. They may have their kids around their feet when they're on the computer, or they may not be well and be homebound and not be able to leave, but they can still gain access to learning activities. So while I'm not wanting to take away from the importance of face-to-face contact, a platform like this allows people to continue to live the way that they're used to, but broaden their horizons and build bridges to future opportunities for learning and for employment.
In those remote areas, there would be, I imagine, very few work opportunities. So what is the motivation for these people in remote areas?
I would say that, yes, you're right. Now, if we take the Canadian example for a moment, and actually some examples in South Australia as well, one of the big industries right now is mining. And with the mines being on Indigenous land, one of the agreements between mining companies and Aboriginal communities is that they will hire a certain number of people to work in that mine. And we find in Canada that even though people have certificates that say they have their year 10 or their basic requirement that they need to work in the mine, they get to the mine and they can't handle the work environment because of the text-heavy environment that it is, and it's difficult for them to survive in that environment. And maybe they will obtain employment, but then don't retain the employment. And I think that that's fair to say in this context in Australia as well. But some of the motivation when we talk to the learners within the community and try to find out what it is, it's about their children. It's about ensuring that they can help their children, that they can read to their children, that they can continue that growing of their people and of their culture and their traditions in their community through their children. It's about their language. And when we talk about literacy in Indigenous communities, we're not just talking about Australian Standard English, but we're talking about Aboriginal English as well. And it's about ensuring that that continues and that their native language continues as well, preservation of culture and that kind of thing. And I think what I've come to is a really big factor is an Indigenous voice. To be able to have those literacy skills and to have that knowledge and that know-how enables an Indigenous community to stand up in a Western civilization and be able to say what they need to say about their community and their needs specific to their community in a Westernized context. And I think that that's something that really has driven at least the group that I've worked with is ensuring that they have that voice and that they're able to express themselves in the way that's necessary outside of their community for that purpose. So if we just go back and take a look at some of the practical ways that we've used a platform like that, for example, the very first course was a course called First Nations Management Training. And this was a course for people who lived and worked in Indigenous communities, but needed some training around things like accounting and business practices and that kind of thing. And one of the courses that they needed to take at the TAFE level or college level at home was a communications course. And a lot of those who were taking the training hadn't been in school for a very long time. So this was a kind of a bridging course between what people had learned from school and what they needed to know to be successful in this course. So everything is available free of charge. They can log on, they can do what parts they want to and what they don't want to. And we could bring up, questions around grammar and that kind of thing. And it kind of grew from there to a course that I was really proud of called the TACT program, Teacher Assistant Career Training. And so these were people who were working with children with disabilities in these remote schools and never had received any training in how to work with children with disabilities. So we did things like exceptionalities, learner programming, how to make a learning plan, talked about learning styles, working with teachers. And so these learners, there was 48 of them to start in about 18 different communities, would log on at the same time and go through these lessons. And we really started to build this sense of community within the program. So for instance, Halloween came and at home we all get dressed up for Halloween. And some of the learners brought pictures and had scanned their pictures of their kids in costumes to share with everybody else in the group. Now, these were people who never, in most cases, had never met each other. But still to this day, when they come down to town for medical appointments or what have you, I'll get a phone call or I'll get an email, do you want to have coffee? And I know that many of the learners connected in that way as well. In South Australia, for instance, the project took a look at the public school and the importance of school in this community and how it's changed through the years and how it's really the center of everything that happens in the community. And that was shared with people in Wollongong. That was shared with communities, a couple of hours down the road, and using that synchronous platform. So they start to think about, well, what other things can we do with that platform? You know, for instance, the ladies in this community have a wonderful herb garden, and it's like a business where they bring herbs to Adelaide Market. What about taking pictures and doing little movie clips about how to start something like that and how to run a business and make a PowerPoint presentation to put onto the platform and share with other Indigenous communities? Or they have a great childcare program and they do great songs and arts and crafts and that kind of thing. So again, documenting that to share with other communities. And they start to think about the history of their people and the stories that the elders have to share and the way that they can be then shown through picture and song and voice and shared with other people across the country. So in this particular case as well, there was people who have been taken away from that community through the Stolen Generation and ended up in Europe. And they said, how great would that be to connect with some of those people in Europe and share our language and share some of the traditions that they never had a chance to learn. So those are some of the kind of practical things that we see that can happen using online technology in that way, where people still are in their communities but able to share and to learn at a distance.
What motivates you to do this work?
It's a really good question, Tony, because I get asked that a lot. What brought me to this job and why am I so passionate about what I do? And I'm not an Aboriginal person, and I'm not from Aboriginal descent. However, I've had lots of experience living and working and being with these wonderful people. And I have a real passion for connecting them and helping them to create that voice that they need to survive outside of their community. And so for me, I feel maybe like a little bit of a liaison. And my goal is to help to build strengths within the community around, technology and literacy to empower that community. I'm in no way someone who's coming in and saying, we're going to do this, but I'm coming in and saying, listen, try this. What do you think about this? Let me show you how to do this. Here's a tool that you can use. And what I'd really like to see is being able then to step away from that role and seeing someone within the community become that peer, that peer role model and consult and continue that that little seed that I might have planted to grow from within the community. So that's I'm very passionate about helping to make that happen. And I can only hope for the day when there's, Aboriginal people who are teaching Aboriginal people, who are professors, who are in government and are leading those people. And maybe, way back when, they can say, oh, yeah, well, remember when Michelle Eady came and taught us about that online technology? There's a little seed that helped us along. So that's just how I see my role.
Michelle Eady, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk with you. Thank you for talking to Learning Works.
Oh, I'm more than happy to have done it. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. In that interview, Michelle Eady from the University of Wollongong was speaking of her formative experiences in Canada and her work there with First Nation people, and about some of her more recent work in literacy and computing with Aboriginal Australians in remote South Australia. And that's another community learning resource from PBAFM in Adelaide. Well, that's our program for today. I'm Tony Ryan.